Accession number 3835, reel 5.
Colonel Mundy, reel 5. You were telling me about trouble with tribes on the border.
Yeah, we had one trouble. It must have been about June, I think, 1938. I don't know quite what happened, but it was. We had to send a company out somewhere or other. And a chap from, I think, the Lockie Tongue went out. And there was a bit of shooting. I can't remember much about it.
Was there any trouble on the Abyssinian border at all?
No. We didn't fraternize, but there was no... They had a post somewhat similar as our little forward station police post about 3 or 4 miles inside the Abyssinian border, and I suppose they had some troops further back, but I've just no idea.
Did you have any relations at all with the Italians?
No. It wasn't me. It was a place called Moyale is up on the Abyssinian border by... Do you know where Wajir is?
Yes.
No. Well, beyond that, about 30 or 40 miles, is this place we had a post at Moyale. We were absolutely on the Abyssinian border. Well, within 200 or 300 yards, I gather. I've never been there. Which I have, passed through one. And there was a certain amount of cooperation there. In so much as I gather the Italian officers visited us, and we went in and visited the Italian officers. And there was the episode there, which the war started on, we'll say, a Tuesday. I don't know what the day was, it doesn't matter. But on the Monday, two of the English officers, British officers, went across the border, and they were popped inside. So the Italians had advanced next day, war was declared. So they had advanced information somewhere around. We didn't know that, I gather. These two, that would be the 5th KR, which is separate, several hundred miles from where we were, up at Lockie Town. But I gather that's what happened. We used to go, I suppose they had a drink in the evening, that sort of thing, or walk and so forth, and these two chaps went out, perhaps a little inadvertently, as things were a bit kittle on the home front, and they said, come inside. And, well, there was no argument, apparently. Had to go inside.
Did you have any orders for dealing with the Italians at all?
No.
What were your relations like in Uganda with the local government?
Oh, splendid, good. Philip Mitchell was a personal friend of mine. We'd known each other in Tanganyika. And we got on very well. Oh, yes. And with us, with the Star of the Orient, and a fellow called, what the hell was his name? He was the acting chief secretary. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Mine goes. Who was also a personal friend of mine from... From Tanganyika. He went on, he became Lieutenant Governor of Malta eventually, during the show, when the show was on. What was his name? Oh dear. He's a North Irishman, I can hear him speaking now. Very nice bloke, John. Dear, when Brian goes, we got on very well indeed. No difficulty at all. And Sir Philip Mitchell was very keen on the KR showing itself. So we sent companies, one company went, well, I went out for this trip to Kibando, which is a long way from Kampala, and then we sent a company down south somewhere, and finally a company went up to the Western Islands, across the Nile, you see, the Western Isles, part of the provinces. It was then the border was with Italy, of course. Italy, what the hell am I talking about? Belgium, the Belgian Congo. It went by the Ruwenzori Mountains, Mount McKinley, which is the highest point there, and it's a long ridge, and you get on the hill there, and you look over, and there's the Congo forest stretching for miles and miles and miles. The West Nile province, that's this side, and the West Nile province is further up north. We had some very good chaps from there.
And what would you do on these tours?
We showed the flag. Marched, you see, marched down and showed the flag. Did the exercises and had a parade in front of the provincial or district commissioner and so forth. Marched past and so forth. Philip was very keen on that. Hmm.
What form would these little exercises take?
Oh, little bushwell exercise as one went through the country.
Did you have much contact with local African civilians during these showing the flag exercises?
Well, they came and they were all keen to when the parade was on in front of the district commissioner or the PC. They used to come and watch it. They were quite keen on that. Oh, yes, yeah.
What did Sir Philip Mitchell... What role did Sir Philip Mitchell see the KAR as having?
Well, originally, I suppose, before the war, the KAR was to be ready in case war broke out, and he raised a sort of territorial unit amongst the Europeans, which are... I took out for training and so forth, not in uniform, but tactical exercise without troops and lectures and that sort of thing. And we had a rifle association, and we also had one in Tanganyika too, I forgot that. And they came up on Saturday afternoon and shot on the range and so forth, like that. I was going to see them, talk to them. Expansion for, how do you call it, I can't remember now, additional to the 4th KAR, it was sort of subsidiary assistance by officers and a unit which he envisaged as an accessory to the KAR, because, you see, our war station, if the war broke out, from Uganda, it was right way down Mombasa way. So there'd be no troops left at all. He was, and which he did. When the war broke out, we went off, because that was our appointed station, as you've seen on the map there, beyond Mombasa north towards the Italian border, Garsen and the other place.
Garissa?
Uganda was, may I say, denuded of troops. So he'd got this show going. He had it going. He just started it when I arrived out, and he told me to sort of organise it and get things going, which he did. And we got hold of some Europeans who would be officers in it, and I went and lectured them and so forth at times, and gave more advice I could. So as to sort of take the place of the KAR when the KAR, of course, lock, stock and barrel, actually, of course, it didn't really happen, because we were left behind a cadre and which enlisted more African troops from Uganda. And they went to the news station at Bombo to Jinja, where the barracks had just been completed.
I see. Can you tell me more about the... How did the Europeans react to this training? How did they take to it?
Oh, they came forward. There's no hesitation about that. They picked up the idea and,
Can you tell me more about the preparations for war?
Well, we had our mobilization scheme.
What was that?
Well, we had a certain amount of reservists came in, and of course we had to prepare for our journey from Kampala to Mombasa by train. We went down by train, and I left behind a district officer who was a good bloke who organized the, because the women had to be left behind. They were rather a difficulty because they didn't understand it at all. They thought they were never going to see their loving husbands again and all that sort of thing. And I gather he had a good deal of, but he was a good chap and he knew the African well. And I gather things more or less settled down. And then a certain amount of, I think we had sort of a certain reserve which came up. And then, of course, there was recruiting for another battalion and so forth.
How did you go about recruiting for this other battalion?
Damned if I know. I had nothing to do with it.
What was Sir Philip Mitchell's attitude towards Africanization? What was Sir Philip Mitchell's attitude towards Africanization?
Oh, strongly in favour. Oh, yeah.
What forms of Africanization was he in favour of?
Gradual introduction of the African into administrative duties as ADO, to forest departments, to not so much education, because they weren't fitting educated, but that kind of thing. Forest. Justice. Into the police, of course, bringing senior chaps up to inspector duties and so forth. But it's all a very, in spite of it had been an idea for a bit of time, or rather embryo condition.
What form did Africanization take within the KAR? Did you encourage African NCOs to take more of an initiative at all?
Yes.
In what way?
I can't. If I recollect right, I'm not quite certain. But in days gone by, there used to be an effendi, an officer class. And the idea, if I recollect, was to bring that back so that there would be officers of that type into the KAR. But it was, mooted and hadn't really taken an effectual role, as it were, because the war broke out, that rather sort of stifled matters of that nature.
Where would these effendi have been promoted from?
Well, from the ranks. Well, sergeants or company, there were company sergeant majors, that sort of thing. Oh, yes, from the ranks, yes.
Did you have many European NCOs in Uganda at this time?
It was increased, you see. They sent out one sergeant per company, extra. There was a company sergeant major, but then there was another extra sergeant, and this educational warrant officer whose job was not sort of fighting, but to as the army education corps demanded to teach the Africans English.
What was your attitude towards Africanization, Colonel?
Well, I was all for it, but it had to be very gradual, because the intellect of the African is a little, shall I say, dull. It takes a long time for things, in my opinion, to sink in. Oh, it would have come, yes. But it would have been rather gradual, I should say.
Were you in favour of it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Was the attitude...
Was all bringing the African up to run his own country. We want the soldiers to do it just as to the civilians.
Was the attitude of... European civilians towards the Africans and towards Africa, towards the Africans, any different than yours?
I don't think so. We all like the Africans very much. We got on very well with them, civilians as well as soldiers. The Africans are employed in sugar business the Greeks ran. In Kampala, in Uganda, sorry, and what else was there? I can't remember now. There was not some, but rather different to Kenya, where there was a tremendous lot of civilians actively employed in business, of course, as well as in agriculture. Coffee, farming, so forth, cattle farming, maize growing, in Uganda there were more, it was more business, chaps in business in Kampala, and the Greeks who had plantations of sugar and so forth in various areas. But as far as I know, the relationship between the African and the European and the Greeks were, and of course the Hindis, there any amount of Hindis there, just the same as there were in Kenya and Uganda. Shop owners were nearly always, because the African didn't take to it. He didn't bother to. Whether he couldn't or not, I don't know, but he never bothered to run a shop. It was always either the Hindi or the Greek, of course. The big towns would have a Greek, possibly, but the little villages would have a Hindi running a shop. So I think they did pretty well, and I think they did pretty well. And there were some good, very high-class shops, in Hindi shops in Nairobi. Oh, yeah.
What were
they? And in Dar es Salaam, too, oh, yes. There's a big, big store, what was his name, Hassan, somebody or other, who ran a big, and I think pretty profitable, general store, all kinds of things in Dar es Salaam. And Haji, who was the chap who ran ivory and that sort of thing, also.
What were relations like between the English officers and the Greeks and the Hindus?
Why, quite amicable. I knew some of the Greeks, more particularly in Dar es Salaam, yes, in that area. Can't remember much. We'd Bombo, which was 25 miles from Kampala, but I didn't meet, run into people quite so often, because we didn't very often go in. But I knew quite a number of, well, yes, a number of Greeks in Dar es Salaam, Tanganyika, which I liked. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
You said before that things were expanding a little in Uganda. Were your units larger than they had been in Tanganyika?
They were all brought up to the same standard. You see, all the KR battalions became four companies and machine gun units and a certain amount of mechanical transport. And all they were all raised, the Nyasaland battalions, just the same as the Tanganyika and Dar and Uganda and Kenya, all raised to the rank of lieutenant colonel with a full complement of officers and companies, as opposed to what they were beforehand. They all expanded. The same. I mean, the principle was ran right through. I suppose the colonial office authorized it. I don't know, but it was. They were all the same boat.
Did you find that this made it easier to get money?
No. Well, we were given money just the same. No, I don't think so.
Right,
all fully paid and all that sort of game. And it was an additional expense to the governments because we were expanded to a full-strength battalion like it was at home. Colonel, second in command, adjutant, company commanders, weapons and so forth, and mechanical transport.
Did your duties increase as the regiment expanded?
Oh, yes, well, we had more chaps to play with as well.
Can you tell me in what ways your duties increased?
Well, the training of four companies is much increased instead of two companies or machine gun units. The numbers are increased. You've got further officers and NCOs and men to train.
Did you get fresh officers coming out from England?
Yes. You were up to a certain, I can't remember quite what the details were, but you had a certain number of officers attached from various units in, sometimes mostly from infantry battalions at home, and you then informed the colonial office or through the government that you were going to be short of, you see, the end of so many years, there were, say, two or three officers going home. That if you want replacement, you sent that those lists in, and I suppose the officer at Dar es Salaam and Entebbe and Nairobi, their side of the KR, they forwarded to the colonial office that certain units will want to replacements of so-and-so in the next two or three years, or two or three months, or something like that, or 5 or 6 months, I don't know. But I've worked quite well. As an officer went away, having finished his tour, you got one in replacement quite quickly, but you didn't have to wait very long.
Did it take new officers long to adapt to African conditions?
No, I don't think so. No. Some are assimilated, of course, quicker than others, but that's just human nature, isn't it? Hmm.
What, as war approached, did you feel that your regiment was prepared for it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we were a fighting unit. Oh, yes. Oh, I know no qualms on that call. They were, in my opinion, train for such war as we should encounter, which would be with the Abyssinians, if and for that we were fully prepared to take them on. Of course, the later on, of course, the KR went to Burma, that I had gone there.
Can you tell me, did the training change in any way as war became closer?
Well, we got pamphlets out from England, recent methods of training and so forth, which we studied, and applied to requirements as they emerged.
What were the main problems you encountered in dealing with African troops? Was there any drunkenness?
No. They had their pombe, which is a sort of rather stale beer. Very, well, we don't know. I didn't like it. I used to drink it a bit now, but only now and again. No. There was a certain amount of boozing, yes, but not outrageous or anything like that. Problem with the African.
Were many of your African troops married?
Oh, yes, oh, quite a lot.
Did you encourage this?
Oh, yes, yes, it, yes, yes, we did, yes. Mm. It simplified cooking and so forth.
In what way? Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I think the chaps were happier with a wife, reduced the incident of VD, and, well, oh dear, oh dear. For general amenity, it was more quite satisfactory. I didn't inquire too closely about the relations, but to... as long as the woman behaved herself.
Did you have any cases where the where trouble was caused because the woman didn't behave herself?
Oh, yes. I had one more serious one in Tanganyika. What the devil happened? The woman went off. Was caught in the act. It was very unfortunate. Oh, yes, that was it. Oh, yes, because he really wasn't. David, unfortunately, well, unfortunately, no, I probably shouldn't say that, but it was a sergeant. And a woman, I think, was caught in the act with somebody or other, I can't remember. Wasn't quite as bad as a sergeant, company sergeant major sweep, but it was just another African soldier or something like that. And the fellow came to up and said that his wife had gone off and he wanted to get rid of her. But he was a Catholic. Oh, dear. So I said, well, you know what your religion is, don't you? Oh, he said, I don't give a hoot about that. The woman's gone wrong and she's got to go. So I said, but then... this question of you being a Catholic, you're not entitled to. Oh, he said,